to Keldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Keldabe Talk Radio. I am your co-host, Crow, and with my co-host, Thaxos.
Hey.
And with us always is Frost.
Yellow.
And Tobias Creed.
Hi, hi, hi.
That's insane.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have gone there.
All right, and over in some Mercs news to start off the podcast, we've got a couple announcements to make. First off, our scholarship was announced recently, going to Riza Krait. The scholarship committee voted in favor of the Krait clan member receiving the $500 scholarship award to help her in her wish to study video games design as a major. Through her times in the Mercs, she's helped with Toys for Tots, Davis County Children's Justice Center, and Walk with Angels, to name a few. So congratulations to Riza.
Yep.
As well, we have two Orrorama Cad to announce for September and October. Darkram and Arch have both received the award for the Order, and they are well-deserved. Dar has been the cornerstone of the Blue Moon Clan over in Kentucky since its founding. Not only has he presided over a very successful and well-liked clan, he's also expanded their membership by leaps and bounds and continues to do so. He's always online, going through builds and doing what he can to help everybody along. His attention to detail shows in his own kits and in many others he's helped out with. This shows in everything else he does as well. We all know that he's a little rough around the edges, but I know him well, and he's got a heart of gold, and he's got it where it counts. Additionally, he's one of the brigade marshals and helps out a lot around the site with that regard, too.
And he was on the podcast not too long ago, so if you want to go back a couple months and listen to that, it was the Dragon Con episode.
This is very true. Yep. The other recipient, Arch, has a little blurb as well. It's very hard to quantify everything Arch has done to deserve this award, because she's done a lot of behind-the-scenes work that many people will never see and or fully appreciate. She's been an official member since 2010, and since then she has dedicated a portion of her time, either directly or indirectly, to the artistic needs of Mandalorian Mercs. Originally, she was brought into the art team by Biohazard back in early 2011, but her work forced her to take a backseat and only be available for emergency needs. However, in 2012... she was contacted about helping with the Little Warrior International logos and award system badges. And since then, she's taken on those projects and others, and currently is the art team lead now. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah.
I hate to say it, it's like I never noticed when she took over, because like it was like was that announced or
it was not?
No, she it was not.
It's in a point of position.
Yeah,
she just stepped into the role and started helping out, which is awesome.
Okay, because I remember talking to Cogs like quite a bit about stuff, and then like
off he went.
Like, when did this happen?
He had some real world stuff to take care of. So yeah. Arch was very, very kind to be able to step up to the role and step right on in.
Yeah, it is funny to actually see it all out in a list like that. Like, yeah, the award system. If you look on the Verdika Corps page, right on the front of the Mercs, all the logos and the mascots and all that stuff, that was all her. A couple of the patches that had come out, like the commemorative Death Watch patch, that was hers. You know, just various stuff like that. So,
it's a lot of little stuff you don't see,
yeah,
or realize who's behind it.
Yeah,
and just go, oh, that's neat, and then don't get a name behind it, which is pretty cool. So
yeah,
she's definitely been a huge help. So thank you and congrats to them both.
Yep,
thank
congrats you. To Dar and my wife.
Biased.
Oh, okay. Why didn't anybody... that is your wife?
Yeah.
Well, that's
Arch is my wife. Yeah.
Oh, is it not Arch? Arch?
Well, it's complicated.
Alrighty then.
Congratulations, Mrs. Anderson.
And that's what we got for Mercs news. Going over to some regular Star Wars news, we've got a couple things coming out for the. For new and exciting things here in about episode 7. Today is actually the last day to get those applications in if you're trying to be in the Star Wars movie, so hopefully whoever's tried to apply has gotten those in. Any of you guys applied yet?
No.
No?
No.
No.
What, I'm going to be the only guy here that sent one in, huh?
Oh, really? Yeah. You did?
Yeah, I figured it was worth a shot.
I've seen there are some other Mercs that have tried out.
Yeah, we've got quite a few. I know several down in North Carolina and thereabouts have submitted and whatnot. Well, and who knows, maybe we'll see a Mando or two in there.
Well, that's the thing. We probably won't be... Well, I mean, we might. We might
you never know.
As Mandos, but most likely we'll just be, you know, guy at bar C.
Oh, I just meant we'll see a Mando in Star Wars, not a Mando as a Mando.
Oh, well, we can guarantee that, because Boba Fett. One of them there Bobble Fetts.
But additionally, something exciting is that R2-D2 is going to be back for Episode 7, and in fact, he's going to be built by the fans.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He is one of the droid builders projects, yes?
Yes, that's correct. It happened back at Celebration Europe, which some of our mercs attended, and Kathleen Kennedy toured the R2 Builders area and happened to make a good contact with some of the builders, and from that happened to be the opportunity for those guys to help out with building R2 for the new movie. So I believe it's Towersy and Steeples are their names. And previous to that, they'd been making R2s for fan events and commercial purposes. And sounds like they've got a shot at the movies, so that's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Congrats to them. I know pretty much everybody here would be jealous of that opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, in all honesty, I don't know why they wouldn't do this sort of thing. I mean, obviously, ILM, they know how to make themselves a droid. But, and I mean, you got guys like Grand Imahara, guys who have built and made their own droids for the films. Before.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, why not if you just go and, hey, look, there's 13 screen-accurate R2s who all move and make sound, and, well, let's just take 5 of those.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, like, you would think that they would have thought of this already, because we have been told repeatedly by everybody ever that anybody who's worn a Mando costume, like, Tamura was like, this... He's sitting there looking at us in the Mando costumes at Dragon Con, what was that, 2010?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And he was all like, you guys can move way better than I was in the hard costume. and the thing is, this is Tamura Morrison. Dude's fast. Dude's kind of beefy. And they had two costumes for him. They had one where he had actual metal plates, and they had another one that was rubber, which was the one they used in all the fight scenes. And
the one where some people are like, oh, look, his armor bulges.
Yeah.
Clearly my armor should be looking all wonky like that. No.
But... And so he was talking about the hard suit.
All of our suits are hard.
Yeah.
Like the pie plates where they're backwards and half the people put them on the wrong way. Even though it makes more sense to have the larger curve facing inwards so you can actually have more mobility. They got them the other way around for the movies.
Yeah, it's just... And they talk about how we come up with these things because we have to wear them. And we have plenty of time to sit around and many years to design something better.
Yeah.
The practicality of actual wearing it beyond just, you know, running across the scene for 3 minutes.
Well, and then breaking every single thing about that piece while you're doing that.
Yeah.
Like clocking your head into a door. You know, that sort of thing. Like we try to avoid that, and when it does happen, we have to come up with a way of fixing it on the spot that's better than gaff taping your shins together.
Yeah.
We love you, Lucasfilm. We love you.
I think Mark Hamill said the same thing about the Stormtrooper. I think he tried on, like, a 501st TK costume, and it was way comfortable.
Infinitely better, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and you have to remember, too, he's, like, 30 years older than he was, and he's like, this is way better. So a man who is 50 is a little less spry than a man who's 19. Not only was it more comfortable, it was more comfortable to a man who hurts all the time.
Okay.
Well, I think it was bound to happen. As you said, it's kind of overdue, in fact, given the number of people that have made their own custom Stormtrooper costumes and all the various creatures and denizens of the Empire or Rebel Legion or Mercs. And I'm kind of wondering how much more in the way of casting calls they might do and say, hey, we need a large group of Stormtroopers in this next one.
Oh, look, the Florida Garrison.
Florida Garrison. Get over here for a moment or two. Because when you think about it, stuff like the Rose Bowl Parade, I mean, I don't know how many people have seen that video. Hopefully everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That is just a phenomenal video where you have so many Stormtroopers marching all in a group. And it is the coolest thing ever. And if Lucasfilm had tried to do that without getting the fans involved, they don't have that kind of... arsenal.
And I mean, if you think about it, like, if you tell a whole bunch of fans, hey, we want you to get in your, like, TK and come march, you know, we need a a huge number. I think, you know, that would, like, save a lot of money for them because, like,
they're like, absolutely. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I would jump at it even if it was just for, you know, not non-gratis.
Oh, yeah. Especially if they paid my flight, then, oh, yeah.
I'd probably go even if the flight wasn't paid for.
Back to the original topic about the R2, I would love to build an R2. I don't know about you guys.
Oh, yeah.
It's on the list.
We've got a droid builder who lives same town as I do, so I get to see his R2 pretty frequently and get to see all the upgrades and additions and stuff that he makes, and it is awesome.
You haven't nabbed it from him yet?
No, his is the real deal. His is made out of, like, aluminum and a lot of laser-cut aluminum and stuff like that. I've helped him move it into his van a couple times, and, dude.
Tucker's heavy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had to carry somebody's aluminum-made R2, and it was just a skeleton, and I thought I was going to die carrying that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're heavy suckers. They're pretty cool, though.
Oh, yeah. But, in other Star Wars news, it's actually sort of neat, because I didn't realize that they weren't doing this until now, but they, Lucasfilm and EA are going to be treating Star Wars video games like they're their own franchises.
That's pretty cool.
I guess I'm used to playing, like, the long chain games, like the Jedi Knight series and the X-Wing series, stuff like that. So I'm sort of, I mean, granted, that was almost 15 years ago, but I guess I'm still used to that.
Yeah. I've been doing this podcast for half a decade. All right, anyways, continue.
So are you announcing your retirement?
No. Not even once.
Not even once.
Now, dude, that's one thing about this, though, is the podcast apparently reaches people.
That it does.
Yeah.
It's
everybody
a lot
knows
of fun. Enjoy doing
it. And I don't know who anyone is as of the podcast.
That was also because we told everybody to PM you that one episode.
Oh, yes, that's true. And I got, like, 15 PMs.
That was funny.
Mission accomplished.
Yep. I think it'll be good that they treat it as their own franchise for the video games, because we'll get to see a bit more of the... I don't know, it'll be more expanded universe out there, and it won't just be building on the same old...
Right.
Well, not the same old, but, you know. Star Wars games are fun. I mean, let's face it. It's Star Wars.
Yeah.
But to see more aspects of the universe above and beyond, you know, typical book plots or movie plots and that kind of stuff,
yeah,
would be definitely nice.
And, I mean, we're still going to get, like, the movie tie-in games. You know, we'll get Star Wars Episode 7, The Game. And it'll have all of it. Oh, I bet we will. I mean, we have for the six.
They're saying they're not doing it, though, so I don't know.
I don't know.
We may not.
If you go to that article, it's like the second paragraph. It says we've done movie games over the years, and we want to make sure that we're not doing a movie game, i.e. game based on the movie.
Yeah. What I'm wondering is, will we still have the Lego Star Wars?
Yeah.
Those
things sell like hotcakes. There's not a chance in hell they're going to stop doing those.
Then we'll still get our movie game through the Lego.
Yeah, I mean, that is a...
Those are probably more fun than the regular movie games.
They are.
The regular movie games kind of suck.
They have no sense of humor.
No.
Yeah.
The only regular movie game that was any good was Jedi Power Battles.
I don't know, I liked back...
I didn't play that one.
Back on the Game Boy, again, dating myself.
Oh, geez.
Empire Strikes Back on the Game Boy. That game was sweet.
Oh, dude, friggin' Super Empire Strikes Back and Super Return of the Jedi? Ha ha ha. Those were so good. They were like Mega Man hard, and they were excellent. And you never thought that the interior of the Death Star, or the shield bunker on Endor, was so big.
No.
You had no idea there were bottomless pits everywhere and platforms and royal guards trying to harpoon you.
True story. Yeah.
I do like the fact they're doing Battlefront again.
Yes.
Yes.
That is a long time coming.
But
that's got to happen.
You can't really trust, I don't know, I don't trust this article because it says that Star Wars expected to be released on 2015, the same year Disney and Lucasfilms does Star Wars Episode 8.
Yeah, I mean, their information is a little bit off.
A little typo there.
But that's
it's
okay.
Just type one too many I's, or are they just bad?
I don't know. I mean, I've seen other news sites that have typographical errors, and even they're supposed to be, you know, legit, so...
Yeah, I mean...
Or maybe they don't
sure
know how to say Roman
eye.
Numbers.
I mean, if they want to release two movies in a year, I don't care. I'll see both.
Yeah, I'll go see both.
Take my money.
Yeah, so actually, that's a new thing Disney's doing. Instead of releasing, you know, finale part one and finale part two of movies, they're going to just condense it into, like, trilogies as one long sitting.
Okay. Give me an intermission to go
refill. 9-hour movie.
Give me a pee break.
It's got intermissions for me to go pee and refill my mega-sized soda.
I would actually be really interested to see how that would pan out, though, if they did the Lord of the Rings style. Mm-hmm. Because they discovered that you save a whole lot of money when you do them that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you only have to fly the actors out for, like, 9 months, as opposed to, like, 9 months over the course of several years.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
So it would be very interesting to see if they actually did do it that way, where we got a trilogy was filmed. And then they released it over the course of 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And that would kind of help since, you know, our acting pool's getting kind of old, like, you know, Han Solo.
Well, those characters...
Or Harrison Ford or whatever you want to...
Well,
he is Han Solo.
Yeah, he's... Well, those people They may or may not die off in this first movie if the contracts are to be believed. We don't know.
But did you guys hear that there's a Han Solo movie that just came out?
That just came out?
Just came out.
Yeah, where Han Solo teaches a little kid how to kill a whole bunch of insect aliens.
No.
Wasn't that Anakin Solo, the little kid?
Han Solo teaches a kid to commit genocide.
Yeah, that was Anakin Solo on the Centerpoint stage.
The sad thing is, you're not wrong.
So there you go, guys. If you wanted to see a Star Wars movie early, just go see Ender's Game. I mean, Anakin Solo on the Centerpoint Station featuring Han Solo as the mentor.
Yeah. Moving on to our next topic, we have Tobias with the Merc responses.
Tis the season for Merc responses, and I asked you guys on the lounge an holiday-oriented question. And I use the word holiday because we're all from different places, and I don't think everybody believes the same thing I believe in. But anyway, that's a topic for another time. If you want to edit that, that is very fine. All right, so I asked, did you ever ask for armor parts for a holiday present? What was the response from the person that was getting you the armor parts? And what was the looks on your family's faces when you opened up those armor parts? And did you have to explain to anybody what you just got? Or, if you didn't have any answers for that, this is a twofer this month, a two-for-one. Because it's, you know, the giving spirit of the holidays. Do you and your clan or fellow Star Wars customers from other clubs or your Star Wars friends have any Star Wars traditions? And here's what we got. First off, comes from, I'm going to butcher this name, is Udesi. It's that he asked for some armor parts, but as of right now, my parents said no. Looks like he's on his own. He does have a holiday tradition with his family where they would, when we had a working VCR, my siblings used to watch the original Star Wars during those breaks, and the rest of the family got the Thanksgiving meal ready, or even the Christmas meal.
Do they dust off the VCR these days, then? Just bring it back out, watch the original?
Nah, it doesn't say, so I'm going
to
guess.
They'll have to get back to us on that.
Yeah. Card Rid Vet asked for a vest last Christmas, and he's also asking for a woodchuck prop this year.
That's a good choice. Woodchuck makes awesome stuff.
Oh, yeah. Everybody wants one of those for Christmas.
Tempest asks for Sentra this year. Her mom knows all about her costuming, so she'll probably be cool with it. Tagalar Dressed asks for a set of armor from eBay 6 years ago. I think I had to order it. My mom received it and wrapped it. This comes from Lucky Jack. He says, this year, asked my wife and the kids for a variety of Mando items to help build my first Merc. The kids are still small, like 9-year-old, 7-year-old, so they think good old dad is a rock star for becoming a real Mandalorian. And his wife is actually real supportive of our mission to volunteer, serve the community, and help those in need. So I think that's a great Christmas present. And Mrs. Lucky Jack, you should definitely follow through with that.
Awesome. Sounds like a bunch of members might get some pretty cool stuff this year, then.
Absolutely.
Or those of us who just ask for cash.
So, my question, I always follow this up with a question to the panel. Have you guys asked anything for the holidays?
That's a negative, Ghost Rider.
Yeah, no. Last year, my wife being in this club, I mean, she's gotten me stuff for, like, my birthday. Like, she got me a pair of the Django Westars for my birthday a couple years ago, but I've never really asked for anything for, you know, the holidays or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've got some Star Wars related stuff.
Yeah.
The holidays or birthdays.
Half of my Christmas presents when I was growing up as a kid, you know, were Star Wars toys. There was no way that they weren't gonna be.
Yeah. Well, seeing as I build most of my stuff, I don't go and ask, you know, hey, can I get a 4-foot by 8-foot sheet of 14-gauge aluminum for Christmas? You know, so I think that's probably why, for the most part, it's not really been a thing for me. But I don't know. I typically end up building the stuff not around the holiday season, given how freezing cold it is outside, and some of the stuff you just got to work on outside, not indoors.
Frost.
What about you, Frost?
I actually am getting a piece of railroad track for Christmas. And,
I could really use one of those.
Huh?
I said, oh, I could really use one of those.
Yeah, I know. Well, a railroad track, it turns out, is a great anvil.
Yeah.
And so I have a grandfather who has a whole bunch of welding and grinding and all that jazz, the person who I learn, you know, my stuff from mostly, or at least I learned the basic skills, which I then grew into Mando stuff, making skills.
Yeah.
And we're going to adjust the anvil. Pray we do not adjust it any further to make it into an actual anvil shape as opposed to a tire, or not a tire, as opposed to a railroad track.
Okay, I'm sitting here trying to figure out what does a railroad track have to do with...
It's a giant lunk of steel, and it's roughly an anvil shape.
It's like... It sounds like you're saying, I'm getting like a big plane wing or something.
No. Like the actual track that was nailed to the ground.
This will be like a 1 foot or 2 foot length of...
It's a 4 foot long segment.
Are you kidding? Yeah.
Oh, you can take an airplane wing and probably make some pretty good Mandalorian armor out of it.
I wouldn't doubt it's like 14-gauge aluminum, so yeah.
Yeah. No, the railroad tracks are nice and smooth and slightly curved on the one side, and the other one's just a nice flat
piece of metal. And so you can flip them over, and yeah, it's a great anvil. It's much cheaper than a real anvil.
Yeah. I've used one once or twice. I don't have one yet, though. But, yeah.
But, cool. I mean, you can buy little tiny sections on eBay for like $60, but my grandfather just knows a guy.
And then there's also the shipping.
Yeah, whereas we're going to go ahead and just take a pickup truck to Florida this year.
So the train derailment in Florida, totally not related.
No. Was there a train derailment in Florida?
not yet. You guys haven't gotten picked up yet.
Fair enough. I like that. Not yet.
Also, do you guys have any Star Wars traditions for the holidays, like watching a marathon of Star Wars?
Seeing as it's on Spike all the time and around Christmas, definitely.
I have Star Trek Christmas ornaments. Is that close enough?
Oh, God.
There you go.
There it is.
I've got half of the ornaments on my tree are Star Wars related.
I've got a couple that go on the tree as well. Yeah.
Klingon Bird of Prey and Enterprise D.
Yeah, I've got an Enterprise D.
Are they on the opposite side of the Star Wars?
No, they're not. The Klingon Bird of Prey is always behind the Enterprise D chasing it around.
No, they don't go head-to-head against any Star Wars vessels?
No, are you kidding? Have you ever watched the series? Like, they hardly ever fight Birds of Prey. They're always busy, like, we don't want to fight, dude. Stop shooting at us.
No, I mean the Bird of Prey and the Enterprise shooting up, like, a Imperial Star Destroyer on your tree.
I actually have a Star Wars Christmas tree that's up year-round.
Really?
Yeah, but it's like...
Nerd.
I just have a little Boba Fett statue on my desk.
Pretty cool, though.
That's my Star Wars Christmas tree.
Boba Fett is your Christmas tree.
Boba Fett, he's green. He's green and red.
He is. That's true. It's very true.
Among other things.
I am going to be, hopefully I have a troop coming up here, but I got some Christmas lights that's battery operated that I want to put on my Mando.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sweet. Are you doing like
that's what I do
parade?
for our Festival of Lights parade. Is put on like three of those things.
It's just we don't have a troop coming up at all, so I'm really worried if I'm going to use these or not.
Use them anyway.
Just go up to Maine and troop with them.
Yeah, I'll be up at your doorstep in like 2 hours there.
Oh, that's good. It's the parade Saturday. Get on that.
All right, speaking of the winter festivities and whatnot, we've had a couple people mention trooping in different elements, and we thought we'd touch up on how trooping in the wintertime goes. Now, we know that some people have a quite pleasant winter, like those down in Florida, and don't really have to do too much to alter their gear.
Yeah, it
sucks. Whereas some of us northern folk have a bit more to do in that regard. So what do you guys typically do for the winter trooping? I think we'll let Frost go first, because he's probably not got too much to change.
We don't. Generally speaking, it really tails off pretty hard after September, after DragonCon. However, we do often do a couple of little library-type events, and we do the Christmas parade in North Carolina. But honestly, we don't have to do anything. Because it's a Mandalorian costume, it's already really hot. Because if you've made it properly, you probably have at least 2 to 3 copies of, or 2 to 3 layers of something on you.
Yep.
Mm.
Cloth, duck cloth, padded vest, sorts of jazz.
Hopefully not vinyl.
Hopefully not flannel. That would make you what a crazy Canadian Mando, which those don't exist. That's not a thing.
Actually, I was about to say that. I swap out my regular flight suit for a flannel one every winter.
Do you actually?
But now I want to. Now I kind of want to.
I might
have to make one.
Is it like lumberjack red plaid?
Oh, you bet.
Wait. I thought you don't have a vest.
Well, the problem is that Sean is not okay, and thus he cannot, in fact, be dressed like a lumberjack. Sorry, that was for a specific ladies and gentlemen. If you got the joke, please send a PM to Fascist.
If you didn't get the joke, please send a PM to Eric.
Wear women's clothes and hang out in bars.
If you have no idea what Frost is talking about, send him a PM.
Oh God!
Ask him for the
portrait. Oh God! What have I done?
And what about you, Tobias? I don't know how brutal your winters are over there.
They're pretty brutal. Just recently, I actually had an event for the Food Bank of Iowa. It's called Combat Hunger, and where like people could just drive up to the side of the road in downtown Des Moines, which is not really a big downtown compared to everybody else in the world.
It's in a town and it's down. It counts.
They could drive up and just, you can give your like food donations to the people without even getting out of your car. So we're standing on the side of the road and it was very, very cold. And I had like a long sleeve shirt on underneath my flight suit. I had pants underneath my flight suit, like 3 pairs of socks. I also got like these little cool invention that I heard of just like a month ago called like heat warmers. Like they're the little packets of stuff.
You just heard of those?
Just heard of those?
I mean, I know Thaxos probably has a stock
in
them.
I've been in North Carolina for almost a decade.
It's almost 2014, and you've just heard of these.
Just heard of them!
I was about to say, you know, there's actually, we have these new things. They're approximately the size of, I don't know, the lid of a small Tupperware.
Yeah.
And you hold them up to your ear, and you can talk to people in them.
Don't tell me about that hocus pocus. But,
sorry.
Yeah, I had one in each glove, and I also had the toe warmers on each foot. And I was still cold, but it helped out. And
So how cold was it?
Okay,
and for those that can't see this, I'm doing the quotation marks.
Okay.
As a Canuck, I must.
Okay, so I actually do have an answer for that one. It's a really good answer. I was holding a sign that says, donate here, combat hunger and all this stuff. And I was kind of feeling around on it, and I was like, something about the sign doesn't feel right. And so I took off my helmet and looked at it. The sign was frozen over. So it was below freezing. And,
below freezing.
But what's funny is that...
Shorts weather in Canada.
What's funny is that me and the TK that was doing this, our armor did not freeze over, but the sign I was holding did freeze over.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like you were keeping warm then.
I guess so.
Good stuff. Yeah, so the heat warmers, definitely that's a good thing to add to your kit if you're feeling like you might get some frostbite on the hands or feet.
Yeah. If you're in a super arctic location, that's probably your best bet.
Super arctic.
Super arctic.
Iowa,
just
the new
north
super
of it. Yeah, yes, yes. The
Iowa, colder than hot.
So for those north of Iowa, colder than Hoff, how are you faring, Crow?
I fare pretty well. Like what Frost said, once for most of the year, as long as, before snow happens up here in Maine, I usually don't change too much. Once you're, especially if you're outside and you're moving around and you got the helmet on, I stay pretty warm. For our holiday parades and stuff, I actually, about those hand warmers, I have a radio pack that's made out of a pair of lunch boxes, and I just throw like a bunch of those in that. So anytime one of them like dies or any of my squad mates need one, I'm just like, oh yeah, back in the thing there, right? Open that up, shake them around, stick them in your gloves.
You're carrying a whole packet of them.
Oh yeah,
awesome.
You grab them in around here. You grab them in April when winter is starting to wind down. You can get them for because they come in packs of two, one for each hand. Go figure.
Yep.
You can get them for like 50 cents a piece. So I do that. I'll put on some like flannel pants or something under my legs.
Aha.
Flannel.
Yeah, hey, it's Maine. We know our flannel.
Are there
so
different
we'll do
kinds
that.
Of flannel? Is it like tweeds?
Yeah, you got like winter flannel, summer flannel.
Yeah, because there's like the flannel that like pajama pants are made out of. That's like it's technically flannel. But
it's just a really light flannel.
Yeah, it's not super insulating. But then they also have the stuff that's almost a quarter inch thick.
Yes, that is the good flannel.
Yeah.
A quarter inch thick.
Oh, yeah. You think I'm joking. Yeah,
my swords. The swords that I make, the nice ones, like the rapiers, those are a quarter inch thick.
Yeah. We got flannel that thick.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like, I do somewhere in the middle of those. And I'll wear long sleeve pants. And my feet are usually fine, but I usually just wear like a pair of smart wools in my boots. So that's usually all I need to do.
I should buy some wool socks.
Definitely a good thing to have. Yeah,
they
just make sure they wick away the moisture, because that's one of the things with trooping in the cold is that once you start sweating and you get that perspiration, it actually cools you down way faster, and you're more likely to end up freezing cold.
Yeah.
That's the key, is striking the right balance between staying warm enough that you're warm, but not so warm that you start sweating at all, because then you'll be freezing cold in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, they do make wool socks here in Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Well, the thing that I've noticed most is, like, especially if you already live in a place that experiences winter, you already have all this in your closet anyway. Like,
this is true.
Like, I used to ski a lot, so I just pulled out my old ski gear.
I probably don't.
You know?
I just heard of hand warmers like a month ago.
Yes, this question is for Tobias and then anyone that's down in the deep south that they don't see snow more than once a decade.
Yeah.
For me it's mostly just I got my undersuit that I have from the Republic Commando, and I just throw that underneath the flight suit, and then just typically regular socks and same old gloves as usual.
Yeah.
I don't think I've actually ever used the hand warmers in the gloves or the boots.
Well,
but
I try and keep my gloves the same. Like I usually don't put on any thicker gloves than what I usually wear, so that's where I use those.
Right, yeah. We tend to troop more in the warmer portion of the winter, mostly because not so much that we wouldn't troop in the colder. Yeah, I'll define what temperature range is in a moment. Not so much that we wouldn't troop otherwise, just that the events typically don't happen when it's so freezing cold.
Right.
That no one wants to be outside at all.
Right.
But, typically we'll troop in, maybe about to minus 4 Fahrenheit, minus 10 Fahrenheit. So that's like minus 20 Celsius. Once it gets to that temperature, it's kind of like, eh, it's a little cold out, a little nippy.
Yeah, not much of a parade when there's no one there to watch it.
Well, exactly. We don't tend to have too many events when it gets to that temperature, especially not when it gets down to minus 40.
Yeah.
Well, no, at that point,
conversions are not necessary.
At that point, that's where centigrade and Fahrenheit actually meet up.
Yeah.
People are like, you know.
It's cold.
No.
We can all finally agree.
Yeah, that's when you have to put heat warmers in your car first before you can even get to the troop.
Yeah, it's when your car is plugged in, so it doesn't so it doesn't seize.
But yeah, for the most part, we just as long as it's not too frozen cold, we tend to troop. Definitely the helmet, having the helmet on your head the whole time.
Yeah,
is definitely a benefit. The only thing you got to watch out for is you tend to try and breathe through your nose, that way you don't fog up your visor, and also all the perspiration doesn't accumulate and freeze down the front of your visor.
Yeah,
where you get some icicles forming at the bottom of your T visor. That's always kind of funny to see.
Well, that's why you just take the second to go bonk and knock your chin on your on your chest armor, and if you're a real man and made your armor out of metal.
You get the clink of the
icicle. Excusatory look at everybody not wearing metal armor. then your icicles break off and you're good to go.
Yep, there you go. That's another thing, though. The metal armor does tend to sap the heat away from you a little more.
Yes, it does. It's a heat sink. It's almost like that's how heat sinks work.
It's almost as if.
Mine's a double layer. Don't get that problem.
Yeah, I definitely get some cold sap from the metal, but overall it's not too bad.
Yeah.
And again, you know, typically when you're doing a winter troop, if it is outside, you tend to try and find an activity where you're doing something, not just standing and looking cool.
Come up with a winter version of your kit where you don't have any back accoutrements, you just wear a normal vest, and you have a big puffy jacket.
One thing that that my wife, Ark, does, she actually, her kit is sort of snow-themed to start with, so most of her accessories are already fur-lined and poofy and all that sort of stuff. She actually has two capes. Like, one of them is just, you know, a single, like, duck cloth sort of thing where, you know, it's just a cape that she wears most of the year. But whenever we do the winter troops and stuff like that, she has this big, like, Game of Thrones grade fur cape.
Nice.
That does the job.
Hey, we're north of the wall. We need something.
You know nothing, Arch.
I do say that someday I am going to move to a warmer climate because I hate winter with a passion. Like,
that is unfortunate.
Yeah. Probably
that sucks for you.
I'm going to move down the street from Frost. And is it ironic? His name is Frost and he lives in the warmer part of the country.
He's actually the most southern member here.
Oh, God.
On the podcast,
don't say that to me. The thing is, and I even come from Chicago, which is known as the South of the North.
Yeah.
Well, see, then you've got a little more experience with the cold then, being over in Chicago.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, Chicago's a chilly city.
Yeah, just a little bit. They call it the Windy City, and there's a lake right there. So it's like, oh, let's just blow all this snow all over your face. There you go.
You get a little bit of that wind chill, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
again, layers come in handy when you get the cold wind.
Minus 40 was a pretty good thing in January if you got minus 40.
Yeah.
Every year. Every single year.
Yep.
I thought that was every like week for you.
Well, you had to get bust out like electric starters. Like people would get remote electric starters on their cars just so that way they could start them up an hour before they were supposed to go out there.
Yep.
And also need to
bomb
your car didn't
start
remote,
you called in sick to work. And you were like, I can't get my car to start, and they're all like, oh no, we totally understand.
Yeah,
just hang
out. Yeah, up in Canada, pretty much all the cars have an actual dedicated block heater inside the engine bay that you plug in.
Yep.
It was pretty funny. I had some relatives come up from the States, and they're like, "Wow, you guys have a lot of electric cars." No, it's just winter.
No, those are all diesels, actually, because diesel freezes at a lower temperature.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad I'm not further north because you get far enough north in Canada, and
well, you don't have a car;
like,
you just have dogs or a snowmobile.
Yeah, except when you're that far north, you don't turn off the snowmobile. You just let it run because if it stops, it don't start again.
Yep.
That's for them though. Minus 40 is shorts weather.
Yeah,
they're just crazy.
Oh yeah, frozen eyelashes, like all that sort of stuff. They're like, oh hey, cool, it's warm today.
Yeah, but I do believe we also had some Facebook questions.
We do. A pair of really good ones, actually. We'll start with the question. When making custom Mandalorians, do you think that screen accuracy should trump the wearer's comfort, morbidity, or even the believability of the armor as a whole?
Well, I think definitely in my case, I diverged from some screen accuracy to go more with the mobility and comfort with the more Legacy-style plates. although there are canon comic references that, you know, show the scaled abdomen plates and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But definitely for me, I mean, I went with more comfort, mobility, and whatnot because, as we mentioned earlier, it's not just a costume you wear for 30 seconds on screen. It's something
you gotta
charity
wear that.
Events in. And,
you got to wear that 12 hours a day sometimes.
Exactly. And I would go to some events where, you know, I wasn't necessarily going to rely on someone else to kit me up, so I figured I should probably be able to put all this on by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my take on it. I mean, you can still make it look in-universe without going for absolute screen accuracy and sacrificing mobility.
Well, mine, like, I made mine so it's relatively screen accurate. You know, all the plates are pretty standard templates. The helmet's a normal Merc, you know, helmet. I've got the normal Fett knees. But I did make it specifically that I would be able to sit easily and comfortably when I'm working a table.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How about you, Frost?
Well, I believe, first of all, that Star Wars has more to do with an aesthetic. There are certain aesthetic properties that are common among Star Wars design. Like, for example, circuit boards are not part of that design.
Right.
everything
that future 70s tech.
Yeah, it's supposed to be big red and white buttons and, you know, sort of blocky, geometric-looking architecture, and all the guns are from the First World War, the Second World War, maybe, or earlier. You know, it's there's an aesthetic you have to catch on to and be a part of, and the problem is that there have been previous designs for things that do not fit that aesthetic. Like, there's a whole lot of stuff from the Tor period, and from the
prequels.
There's some of this in Star Wars Galaxies too, but it doesn't really follow the Dirty Universe. Now there is some stuff in Galaxies that does, but a lot of the guns in Galaxies are modern weapons that have been reskinned. And
barely.
Yeah, well, like the proton carbine from Star Wars Galaxies is literally an XM-8 assault rifle that has had the barrel turned into an oval shape.
I think I tended to go for more of the Star Warsy looking guns on that game anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. And so that's
I don't
that's
remember
the thing.
It quite as well.
That's what's more important. It's not building your comfort is easy. You can build a 100% screen accurate costume of Boba Fett and have it be very comfortable. There are plenty of people who do that. Scott Chana, for example, has a very, very good Boba Fett costume, and from what I've been told by him, it's very comfortable. He doesn't have any of the problems with the knees that lots of other people have because he spent some time to make them better.
Mm-hmm.
Like
we said earlier, that's our big advantage.
Yeah.
We have all the time in the world to do this.
Yeah, and that's a false dichotomy. That's not really that's not an opposition. You can have accuracy and comfort. It'll take a little more work, but you can do it.
And for reference, Scott is Jimmy Buffett on the Mercs, if anyone was wondering.
However, I think that the real important thing is that people just design their costume well. They take the time to think out, okay, what does my costume do, and what can I put on my costume that will evoke that in people's minds?
Mm-hmm.
And what image do I want to portray? And if
you
do that, your costume will look good, especially if you then take into account what looks Star Warsy. It's not about going and being a repainted Jango or being a Mando with exhaust stacks and flames painted on you, looking like Gandalf in his prime. It's about making something look good that you like, and it's about making it look like it's from Star Wars.
Exactly.
All of that comes later. As you work on the costume, it gets better and better.
And there are definitely also members that have a different level of sacrifice to the mobility. You know, those that want to have a jetpack on, and depending on how their harness system is, they may or may not be able to put it on themselves entirely.
And if you
have to keep in mind, will you have a handler around at all times or not?
Well, notable example, Mandalore the Unit. That's a joke. Mandalore the Igniter. And he wears jetpacks half the time, varying jetpacks, and he can never put them on himself.
Even his full suit, I was helping him gear up at a couple cons.
Yeah.
And he could get most of it on himself, but there's one or two elements that just once you get so many pieces of armor on, you can't quite reach that last strap to hook on.
Yeah. And,
especially if you're working with a heavy set, like a heavy pattern set, you have a lot of plates, and you have a lot of wraparound plates and stuff like that. Yeah, sitting may eventually be a bit of a problem, but that's just whether you want to deal with it or not.
Something you got to plan for.
Yeah.
So, in short, to sum up that long response.
You could have done this first.
Yeah, I think that it's more important than trying to determine how screen accurate you want it to be to just come up with a coherent design. Come up with a design, maybe try and work in how you want it to be done in the real world. But that's really something that comes later. That's when you have more experience with making costumes, especially Mando costumes, you figure out. Come up with a good design, and then figure out how to make it work.
Yeah, as long as you take your time with it and put the effort in, you shouldn't have much of any issues reaching both a good accuracy level as well as having sufficient comfort and mobility.
Yeah. And on to our second question, also a very good one. It is, what do you guys think is the best part of a Mando costume to begin a new build with? I think that's probably the big thing. Start a new build, if you were to just completely start fresh. Soft parts or hard parts first, do the helmet or the knees or the blaster, where would you start?
I actually started with the chest armor, but the helmet would be a good place to start with because that's, one of the most important parts. I mean, they're all important, but if you want to put what's at the top of the list is the helmet. So, I mean, hard parts could be something you can start with as general, because, you can get a lot done with it, and it kind of defies your kit.
I would have to say that, as long as you have a good concept done up first, it really shouldn't matter too much where you begin, especially depending on how quickly you're trying to build it or, if you got a budget that you're trying to not spend more than X dollars every month.
And just how you want to do it. In general.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, the first time I built armor, I started off with my Mando. I started off with the armor first, but I did have a sense of what the flight suit coloration would be, what I'd be using for boots and gloves and the helmet and all that. So as long as you know in your mind what all you're using, it really shouldn't matter what you start with, as long as you in the end reach that cohesive design. And I think that's where people can stray a little bit, is if they just start with armor and then go, oh shoot, what color flight suit should I use now that I've got this armor painted up? You might want to reconsider and start off with the cohesive design first. Now, sure, you can get further down the road and go, maybe this armor would look better with a different colored flight suit. But I'd say try and have a cohesive idea first. The helmet's always good though. Just because it's kind of like the focal point of the armor, and once you have that done up, you can better visualize how the rest should follow.
I don't think anybody's going to listen to me as when it comes to working on a costume, because it's like, that guy took 6 times to get into the Mandalorian Mercs.
You have more experience than any of us, then.
There you go.
He must have did it wrong 6 times. Well, 5.
And thus knows the right way to do it.
Well, it was certainly a learning experience.
My short answer is don't do it like me.
Do nothing the way I did.
It's important to notice that you also don't have to do everything all at once. One piece at a time. Like, almost nobody does their helmet start to finish and then moves on to their knees and then moves on to their flight suit. Half the time when I build my stuff in my various, versions of my armor, I would be doing something while paint was drying on something else, or while the sewing machine was cooling down, stuff like that. Especially for folks of us that actually have winter, working on a gun indoors is really easy compared to trying to Bondo up part of a helmet.
Until you get to painting.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, those teams.
Yeah. And there are seasonal things, too. Like, if you decide to make your Mando costume in the middle of winter, you're going to be doing your soft parts Because you cannot paint hard parts in the winter. That's not a thing.
I do.
Not indoors, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, if you live south of where I live, if you live like in southern Georgia, maybe. But
yeah,
everywhere
else.
We
have this giant heater in the corner of our garage, so I would go
see,
out
that's
there.
That's the key word, garage.
I thought the key word was giant heater.
No, like, you turn it on and let it get heated up, and it's like a tropic in there. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that was my favorite part of working on that. I could walk into a different climate in my garage.
Yeah.
So if you're lucky enough to have one of those, you're set. You can work all year round.
Yeah. I've got a very small porch that is overlooked by winter.
Yeah. The best you can hope for is a you know, close to the freezing, but just slightly below in this winter. Pick one of those good days, not too much humidity, and then have everything indoors nice and warm.
Mm.
Take the one piece you want to paint, take the spray can with you out, paint one layer of paint, bring it all back in, let it dry. That's how I had to get some of my stuff done.
Yep.
But hey, it works. The trick is just, you know, don't forget the paint cans outdoors.
Yeah.
That's not going to work.
So I suppose the general answer to this question then is there is no best part.
Yeah.
I mean, a helmet is a key part, but a helmet can be, it can also be the most, it depending on how you want to do it. If you want to scratch build a helmet, then yeah, that's going to be the hardest part. But, you know, if you're
I'd say the best part to start on is the concept and planning. Get that set first.
Yes. Planning should always be the best part. It's very hard to plan after you've started.
And yet people do it.
I skipped that part.
I've done it too.
I think our general consensus was like hard parts we start with because, I mean...
Yeah, well,
they're more
I don't
fun
know, I mean,
too.
Well,
for me, I most
the first time, when I started Frost, the very first thing I drew for him was a gun. Though, really the very, very first thing I did was a crappy photo manipulation of the armor from Star Wars Galaxies.
Mm.
Which was actually done after I did a repaint of a Jango skin for Jedi Knight Academy. So, actually, that means that my advice holds true through all of my costumes, because it means that I came up with a design and an idea in my mind, very first thing. And that's what I did with the Sado costume. I started and I said, I want to have a Mando who is parakeet colored. I'm serious. Like
I can't unsee that now.
Cockatiel colored. Like, and I was like, okay, how could I do that? And so then I drew out a picture, and it looked god-awful. And then I put that in a pile somewhere and drew another picture that I liked better. And that was the first version of Sado that I did poorly. And then he's gotten redesigned several times since then. But ultimately, I created a sword-wielding parakeet. And that was the image I came up with. And then I built that.
I have a good question here. What year was this Grandpa Frost?
2008.
Okay, so
2007, 2008.
He old.
And... I designed Frost in 2003, so...
He really old.
Yeah. Predates the club. So, yeah. So that was old, but that was the way I decided to do it, and it has worked for me ever since. And I always do a design before I do the next version of whatever costume I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I sit down, draw it out, and say, okay, this is what I think I want out of this costume this time around.
What the hell?
Alrighty. Terry Fisher, ladies and gentlemen.
The joy of spring, a day that takes us through the darkness, a day that leads us into life.
What is she saying?
A day that makes us want to celebrate.
Why is he wearing a Snuggie?
Thank you for listening to our December episode of Kel Dobby Talk Radio. And for myself, Thaxos, Frost, Pinocchio, Tobias, Biohazard, everybody who has been part of the podcast this year, we wish you a happy holidays, happy new year. See you next year.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.
Happy holidays
to you.
The sleigh bells keep ringing. Happy holidays to you.